Welcome to the Knock on Archery podcast, where we bring all archers and bow hunters together from all walks of life with the goal to educate, empower, and inspire you to be better both in the field and on the range.
And we're rolling. All right, this is an exciting day. I am down in Texas. It's February, and I'm sitting here with, I use nicknames. This is Big B Brian, Helms Deep, and Nate Dogg. You guys can say your real name if you want to.
Brian Anderson or BA.
Okay, tell everyone what you do, too.
I've been with G5 for 15 years, was on the sales side for the last 12 and 13, and just came over to the marketing side, taking over the brand management, community manager spot.
Very awesome. Helm?
Jeff Helm, down here in Texas. I've been supporting the G5 brand for probably 13 or 14 years now.
At least.
And
we've all met at TAX, FYI.
Yes.
For those of you listening, we've met at TAX. And just to give – we're on a cattle ranch, so if there's a squeaky belt on an old Chevy going by, you know we're in the right spot to test broadheads. Let me just tell you that.
That's true.
So, yeah, we've all met at TAC, just a little background. And honestly, I guess before we get to Nate, I love mechanical broadheads. I mean, I like them all, but I like mechanicals. And I've tried so many different ones. And I don't even remember how it came to be. But for some reason, I've never, like, picked a corner. I've really enjoyed floating. And I've shot the ones that I've liked the best. But I also know what I don't like about even the ones that, in my opinion, were the best option at the time. And actually, we were at the TAC. I think I popped into the G5 and Prime booth just to hang with you dudes a little bit. And I said, hey, you want to work on a broadhead or something? And then we met at the – didn't we meet at the ATA show?
Yeah, we did.
Yep. I'm trying to remember because it's been – this isn't like – for those of you listening, this isn't a project where it's like, oh, Dudley changed broadheads or whatever. This was a project. It was a fun project. And full background, I've always loved G5. The very first DVD I ever did was DD Bow Hunting, me and Darren Cooper. And G5 was actually the broadheads that we used for that DVD. They were, you know, the Montex and the Strikers at the time were kind of the options. Yeah. And really loved those. And Sharon and my boy, all of their first animals for years were with Montex because the simplicity and low poundage, they were so awesome. And I honestly, I've always liked that the MIM process. And I've just always loved your ferrules and how true all of your heads have always spun. They spin true every time. And your blades on the mega meets were scary to look at, like your eyes would bleed. So we decided to get together, collaborate, and bring out the best two-blade mechanical that we feel like we could, giving all the cool things that we loved about mechanicals that are on the market, including yours. You know, for me, my input came from including a lot of others, but also then changing the things that we all thought could be better at some point. And then through this project about, I guess it was a little over a year ago, Nate, I met you and Matt, right? And we started the concepts. Now, before we start talking, I'm going to let Nate talk a lot. I'm going to let all these guys talk a lot here. But for those of you listening, if you're listening to the audio version, we will have a video version of this on the YouTube channel. So make sure you watch that because we actually have some props and stuff here that we'll talk about, some of the first prototypes. What prototype are we on, Nate, just before we
Is
it generation like 38?
Well, I think the blades, I think we're in the high 30s. The ferrules, I think we're in the high 20s. The retainers, I think, are in the 20s.
Yeah.
And I think the screw, we only have like 3 or 4 versions of that one. So. But, you know.
Screws were solid. But,
yeah. So there's lots of variations. That's one thing that we do just as a design philosophy and a philosophy of just a product development is we just develop a lot of variation. You can I think a lot of guys can get hung up on calculations or theories or you know, perspective. We would rather just develop a lot of heads, variations, and just test them all.
Yeah.
You know, so instead of having these arguments, Brian has an idea of A and mine's B and maybe Jeff's is C. And instead of arguing, let's just make all three of them.
Yeah.
And then test them and then tweak them. And that's what we did here. And that's what we've been doing for years. And so we kind of lose track of,
yeah,
of revisions, to be honest with you. So, but I'm not exactly sure where we are assembly-wise with it, but I know, I mean, we've been tweaking this a lot.
Yeah, this has been such a fun project. And by the way, that's Nate Grace, one of the family members.
Yep.
From who owns Grace Engineering, and your family has always been, honestly, stand up, super credible people. Like, you guys are,
amen.
Honestly, the Grace family have all been gentlemen. I've never met your sister, but all the guys I've met from your family have just been gentlemen in the industry. You've always been supportive, even if I'm shooting a PSC, you know, you guys were prime, and obviously, like, G5 was what started it all for you guys. So it's nice to be, you know, we're out here with several different bows. We're all just shooting broadheads, and we've really been shooting actual working heads for maybe 5 months. Is that right?
Yeah, it's about right. Yeah.
So, it's been pretty, this has been one of the funnest projects for me, honestly, since the Levitate. This has just been really cool, conceptual. So to go back, the Mega Meat has been an awesome head. And honestly, it was a surprising head for me because when we met, you kind of said, well, why don't you just like the Mega Meat?
Right.
So for those listening, I'm just going to say it this way. When it comes to a mechanical, if you think of a graph, when a mechanical first touches it, there's definitely going to be a slight decline in the penetration because it does need to open and it doesn't have a blade on the front contacting it. But once that enters in my opinion, there's other factors that then it come into the graph of, and I guess the easiest way to say it is trauma. Mm-hmm. And so trauma and penetration then start to calculate in, and I think that's when the mechanical starts to climb the graph back again. But the question is, if you can make the mechanical to where when they enter, that graph is as close to even as possible, well, now, you know, you got two cars coming off the line on a drag strip and one's a little bit ahead, but then the other one just takes off.
Right.
And honestly, but when you get too good of a jump, you know, you can't catch up. Especially when you're talking on a whitetail 14 inches. It's not enough time to catch up.
Right.
So we really wanted to come up with something to where upon entry and deployment, which so far every deployment on all the ones I've shot, all you guys have all been shooting this weekend too, there has never been a small entrance hole on entrance.
Incredible.
So once that happens, well, then the whole thing starts to balance out. And if the penetration can kind of keep up as much as possible with, honestly, you guys have cut on impact heads, you know, they're going to, you know, a cut on impact head with a smaller blade surface, is it going to penetrate? Yes. Is it going to devastate? Not as much. In my opinion, what puts stuff down in sight is trauma. You know, trauma, the more devastation, the faster they stop and the faster, you know, expiration happens,
yeah,
in my opinion.
No, agreed. Yeah. Yeah. That's what we've been seeing. You know, I think as carbon arrows and the ability of the bows to produce the energy and stuff like that, the last, you know, 15, 20 years, we've been able to see that dynamic kind of shift you know, I don't think it was, you know, when we first started, you know, in the 2000s, late 90s, you know, getting that second wound was so, maybe not rare, but boy, I mean, it just didn't happen as much. I mean, that buck I shot this morning, 60 pounds,
Like butter.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and you know, part of it's the broadhead, but part of it's just the efficiency of the systems now that, that everybody's toting into the woods. So, yeah, being able to, you know, I guess early on we were pretty hesitant about the 2-inch cut, about producing too much trauma, because we were always so worried, well, you have to get to that other side, you have to get to the other side. And then just the amount of energy and everything that's going through, that's not really that big of a deal anymore.
Yeah.
Not that it's not something you shouldn't be concerned with.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like it was 20 years ago. And so now, yeah, it's kind of, trauma is definitely key.
See, for me,
I mean, it's much more part of the equation before than it used to be. Before, you just push energy and try to get to that other side.
So for me, and I'll let each of you guys give your own opinion on this. For me, the finish line is the other side of the cavity. I don't like decide whether or not a broadhead is good or not because it has to pass through, because muscles and bones are moving on animals, and unless you've really seen a lot of things get hit and go down in person or on track jobs or open cavities, you get to the other side, that's when the damage is done. When it comes to blood on the ground, sure, you got two holes, it's going to leak more than one, for sure.
Large entrance is great.
See, with the large entrance, which now is happening, one entrance hole, everyone, is equal to two an entrance and an exit with a lot of the heads that people are shooting right now.
Absolutely.
The overall, where it's coming out of, and, you know, we honestly have some footage, because we've brought some really cool cameras, and we've been hunting hogs and deer, specific for high speed footage of what blood flow looks like on entrances and exits. And it's arguable, like, even us, we're all like, how much of this can we show? Now, I know everyone listening's like, you better show it all, dude, but you know, I don't want to be like shadow banned for life for some of this stuff.
We've kind of blushed a little looking at some of the footage. So.
But what do you guys think about that? And what's so cool about your perspective is the Montec made G5, right?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Yep.
I mean, the Montec made G5.
Yep.
So it's not like I'm doing this with a company that is an expandable company. You guys are one of the broadheads I've always told people that have low poundage or, you know, have to shoot a light projectile, really short draw lengths. I'm like, put a Montec on there. They're so easy to sharpen on the run. They're just a bulletproof 3-blade design, and now you guys have expanded on that. But, you know, like you said, you had a different perspective at the starting point, right?
Yeah. Just like our design philosophy, there's, you know, what's lethality, you know, and what, I mean, we kind of had to wait and see how things kind of panned out. Things have been changing, and you don't really know where that's going to go. You know, the customer, what are they going to grab hold of? You know, whether it's better or not, sometimes they just grab hold of whatever they grab hold of for whatever reason. And so usually we're a little bit maybe more patient. Maybe we're just a little bit slow to...
Conservative, I would say.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? It was like, well, let's kind of wait and see. Like, because...
I appreciate that as a consumer, though.
Yeah, like, we never wanted to mislead people.
To archery products, the need to have something to introduce to the ATA show every year doesn't always help the consumer.
Right.
That helps the manufacturer just sell another product because they need to meet sales again.
Right. Well, and we've always, our goal has always been to try to get it to the next generation. You know, if we get that opportunity, that'd be great. But that's always it's the long play. Mm-hmm. So we introduce something that just is terrible, you know, or it's just a fad and it created a whole new problem, or, you know, I mean, those kind of decisions, I mean, have never really been part of our game plan.
Yeah.
Because that'll come around and haunt you. And then guys are like, well, I'm not going to trust this new widget thing that you have, you know? So, but you know, we got into this because we were bow hunters. I had a problem, you know, getting penetration. And so actually our first head was a two blade, all one piece. And
it, was it really?
Yeah, it was called the B-52. Yeah,
I've got like one. I've ever seen that.
Yeah, it was just only happened a couple of years. They were horrible to make. We scrapped more than we made good ones. And so business decision was kill it. And the Montech was what, you know, really took off. But the whole point of it was to help me in the field. I couldn't bring down deer. You know, I was a soccer player, small little Trinosaurus Rex, you know, arms, you know, kind of thing. I couldn't pull a lot of weight, so I needed all the benefits I could get, and a solid one-piece head that could get through was what I was needed, and that's kind of what we've been trying to do is solve real problems.
Yeah.
And that takes time to understand the problem, to be able to see, is this really going to help or not? So,
I think we're, when I look at some of the first Spitfires, you know, definitely not a great penetrator, but people had amazing luck with them. Oh, and I was part of some of the, at the time, NAP was close to us when I was in Wisconsin. So we did a lot of stuff with NAP. You know, those guys would come up to the factory and bring a bunch of stuff, and we would go to places that, you know, had to meet doe population numbers.
My first buck with a bow was with a Spitfire.
Was it?
Two blade.
Yeah. There's really? One in the yeah. There's one on an arrow in the camp here where we're at. So have you always been a mechanical guy, Helm?
No, I've gone back and forth. But
because I didn't even know if you were.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, you kind of showed up here helping us so much. But
Jared, you know Jared Lyle.
For sure.
I was a huge Almer Edge guy.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day.
Okay.
And they were, you know, trophy taker and stuff. So, and then I showed you yesterday, I had a sniper that was given to me by the Rocky Mountain guys back in the day.
Yeah, Bruce Berry.
And my first elk with a bow almost 20 years ago was with a sniper.
Yeah. That sniper was actually ahead of its time.
Oh, it was.
Like, when you brought that out and I looked at it now that it's, I mean, 20 years
20
later.
20 plus, yeah.
And when I looked at the fact that Larry saw that and then Larry bought it and then, like, made a few tweaks to bring Rage into the game, the original owner of Rage, that was a very well-played poker move in the industry because, obviously, I think that set a whole new stage for a product that is really effective in bow hunting. Now,
I was a fixed blade guy forever. Like, that's one of the reasons I came to G5 is I shot Montex for years prior to it. And, you know, when they kind of brought me on board, I was like, even after, like, I've through, you know, a couple generations of T3s and the old Tekkens and stuff like that. And they were all great. But I was still Montech and Striker. Really didn't get on board with mechanicals until Dead Meat, Mega Meat times. And it was like, this is a game changer.
Yeah.
Rear slide, big holes. I mean, there's not anything else in my quiver now.
I went on a Tekken run for like 3 years. I love Tekkens, but, you know, and listen, there was awesome things about them, but there was also certain properties that they were missing.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
But when it came to an amazing head at really long distance and that would penetrate hard at a long distance, that was it. But it wasn't bringing you all the benefits of a mechanical. Yep. It was bringing you the flight characteristics of a mechanical. So do you want to, Nate, get into kind of the discussion for this head that we're pretty sure we're going to call the T2?
Yeah,
I want that. I mean, which fits your guys' business model. I keep bringing in true Dudley words to like try to change it. So they're calling it T2. I'm calling it the Trominator.
We knew that was going to get in there somewhere.
It's my podcast.
I'm bringing it all weekend. So.
Yeah. So, like, when we were at the ATA show, you guys were really asking me what I liked about mechanicals, and you really wondered, you know, what I didn't like about the Megameat. And truthfully, with the Megameat, I shot the Megameat 2 years ago and had amazing, like, surprising results for a three-blade expandable, to be honest. And I wasn't, like, picking sides. A lot of people, it's funny, I've shot, like, six different mechanicals 2 years ago, and people were watching, and then the non-mechanical people were like instant to make impressions about what, and I'm thinking, it's not even the head it was. It's actually the one that you like, but I didn't say which one it was because they weren't all, you know, heads with necessarily my favorite. So, you know, when we met and we talked about the Mega Meat, I said it was actually surprising, but there's properties that I personally love, and I like it when the broadhead can enter the hide on an angle without, you know, and kind of have its direction established. Mm-hmm. And that's why I said, like, I really feel like there's validity to that point. But also, when the point gets too long, most people aren't truly practicing with a 100-grain head that has the length. And I'll use a tripan as an example. That tripan's ferrule length is so much longer than a field point. Even though the weight's the same, the flight characteristics are different.
Your spine, your, you know, front and center, exactly. All that changes.
Yeah, it changes. So by having the tip be able to enter like we talked about, which it's, what would you say this is compared to a Mega Meat? Two or three times longer? Compared to a
The whole action is different.
Yeah, you know, yeah, for sure the action is different.
So like I don't know if it's a whole lot longer, but I just think the action, because the blade is passing through the ferrule,
yeah,
and it's going to the other side, the effectiveness of what you're talking about,
that
tip tracking.
Yeah, because yours stay on the same side as they deploy back in there in the slot on the Mega Meats. But I remember with the Mega Meats when I got them, and actually it was that time 2 years ago when I was like, I really want to do a mechanical head, but who do I want to do it with? And that's really why I got some Mega Meats, I got some Strikers, I got some of the solids, and I shot them all. But I remember I called Nick Munt and I said, hey dude, like, give me the rundown on the Mega Meats on big game, because I was wanting to, you know, take them on an elk hunt. Yeah. And I would 100% trust Michael, Nick, and T-Bone with any type of, like, you know, if they're going to talk broadheads, like, those are the people I want to have legitimate broadhead conversations with. Because when you have three guys that all shoot like dozens and dozens of animals a year, and then they're in camps, big camps, where certainly those guys are being called out on track jobs.
Oh, yeah.
Then your knowledge of a product dramatically increases, because it's like, it's true field time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was, and Nick's like, dude, do not sweat it. Shoot whatever you want with that thing. You know, and I'm like, all right, I'm going. And what I love about them is the blades were just amazing. You know, and your ferrules have always been great. But I'm just kind of stuck on the, for me, 2 inches just changes the game. Yep. For if it's not blood on the ground, it's blood in the cavity when you open it. And the pump station is clear.
Oh, yeah.
Compared to, you know, half of that size. And, you know, if you think about, let's say that, you know, this is maybe like the size of a cow elk. We're sitting on an old Yeti cooler here. And, you know, if you penetrate in, and let's say you don't get all the way to the other side, but you get 3/4 of the other side, but you have 2 inches. So let's say you've got, you know, 12 times 2 is 24. Well, if you go that extra, you know, 4 inches right there, but that whole pass was only 1.25 inches, to me, there isn't as much blood in the cavity, you know, with those. So, and, you know, you kind of even said, like, I didn't, when you were here and you came in yesterday,
yeah,
and you shot your buck, and your buck footage is insane, right?
Insane. Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah. Red, awesome. Red dawn. And, I mean,
were you surprised?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, like, that buck, and we couldn't have trained him any better, you know, to die so dramatically. But no, but yeah, I mean, it's been.
Has this project surprised you in what's happening?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it has made
to me. I've been a little slighted by it in years past. And so I guess I was like, you know, it's going to be effective, but it's not going to be as a, you know, quite as effective as a three blade.
Yeah.
But boy, it's being more effective than I thought.
Yeah.
But again, I'm the guy back stuck in the lab, you know, and that's like you were talking about, you know, the conversations you want to have are with guys that kill stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what you guys do. And that's, you know, and so for me, a lot of stuff is surprising because I spend more time in the lab than I do in the woods. So, but it's been very pleasantly, but I mean, it's taken a lot of work. It wasn't like one or two prototypes when we were there. So
no,
some of the early ones that we sent to you weren't fully opening, you know, like they were stalling out.
They
about
did
an inch
for me.
Three-quarter. Yeah. And we knew in the lab.
No,
that
actually you should rephrase that.
Well, they were in the lab.
The ones you wouldn't send me when I really wanted them in August.
right.
You're like, dude, because you guys have a testing method. Mm-hmm. So there's so much that goes into broadhead testing, but you have a testing method where you're like, we need, and that was one of the things that I thought was pretty interesting. I don't know what generation this particular broadhead is, but as this blade is sliding back, I didn't realize that how you design the back edge of your blade itself is so critical to that movement. But once you showed me, I'm like, well, duh. Yeah, because if that angle isn't right, it does stall out.
Yeah.
But.
And the first ones were, they wanted to open every time really early. Didn't even matter the poundage. You know, we were holding those things with way too much poundage. But they wanted to open, but they would stall at about an inch and a half to inch and three quarters, and we just couldn't get them to fully open. And so we had to circle the wagons and
somehow figure out to get a 4-inch cut on a 2-inch blade.
I know some of the Michelin soles are. So.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, they really were. Well, that's awesome. Through this project, Brian, what are you – I mean, from someone that's inside, that's why I wanted to have you on the podcast because – you know, you get someone that works inside of a factory and has been part of several different departments. Obviously, you get perspective on this stuff, but you also get perspective on, like, what you feel like is the best for your brand. Because, I mean, you're honestly a broadhead company.
Oh,
so
for sure.
Once it started to come together, I mean, were you kind of like,
Yeah, no, for sure. Because, like I said earlier, we've had two blades. We've had mechanicals through the years, but we've never really taken off in the two blade category. You know, there's kings out there of that two blade, and we kind of came to a decision internally that we know what we're doing in three blades. Let's go down our channel, you know, and that's where the Mega Meat and the Dead Meat have just done so last 3 years, it's been exponential growth for sales, customers. I mean, everybody loves those broadheads. So for us to go back to look at a two blade after kind of pushing it to the side and saying, that's not our game. Was pretty shocking, you know, internally. I was like, man, do we really want to do this? And to see it kind of come together more and more and more. And just, I mean, especially this week, we've had, you know, done some testing internally, done some testing on some animals back home. And man, it was like, this is eye opening. And then to come here and put, you know, see what it really can do.
Because you got, up until this, were you only basing off all the footage I was sending you?
No, we have a place back home. We did some testing on some animals and things like that. So, I mean, we had them through some animals and, I mean, and the guys that we work with, Nate's team, they're one of the new guys. He's pretty, I would say, dainty, but he's not a big guy. So he's shooting 52, 53 pounds mm-hmm. and putting them straight through, you know, whitetail does and getting big entrance, big exits. We're like, whoa, at 50-some pounds, like this is
awesome.
Surprising, right?
That's, you know, amazing.
And then to start doing more and more and just kind of see what this head can really do is it's kind of eye-opening, really.
Because I got I think I got the ones that you were actually kind of comfortable with. I didn't like force you to send me right at like the beginning
the text
of November.
Were pretty, you know, ominous.
So I like left.
I think there was a lot of or else.
Yeah.
In there.
Yeah. No, I'm just, yeah.
Maybe or that was else. For my brother. That was bad, yeah. Send him or else. Yeah.
So I went. I went with some of my closest friends to a place in Texas, and honestly. I shot a whitetail, but I was like, I want to go where like all the hogs are. Cause honestly, big boars, well, any hog truthfully is just a very good test because even if the hog isn't big, if they've rolled in mud and they've got a half inch of mud on their side,
oh, yeah.
Now you're shooting through
armor.
Now you're shooting through it. Like literally like cement board.
Yep.
You know, a quarter inch of cement board and then hair,
yep.
then flesh. But like, I, you know, I've shot some boars that were as big of a boar as I've ever shot. And I did not get a full pass through, but literally full stunners to where the impact and the cuts just dropped them like they were hot. And then just instant blood coming out, even with the shaft in. And so I was like, you know, I think you guys got me 15 heads and I shot 15 animals in those 3 days. So, and no, I do not show all the things I shoot people. There comes a point where, you know, I catch enough slack for it to begin with, but,
Well, and the other thing about pigs too,
it was crazy though. Every single one, I was like, look at this.
Oh man.
Look at this, which honestly a compilation is probably going to be throughout us launching this new broadhead, the T2. There'll probably be snip bits of those in there, but, you know, full disclosure, it will be a R-rated version. Like, not the triple X version. You know, we'll show you some cool stuff that'll get the point across, but we're not going to show anything that makes the industry look bad.
Yeah.
No, that's fair to say, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
what I was going to say about pigs, though, too, is a lot of it, you hear that phrase stuck, you know, bleeds like a stuck hog. That's not true.
Yeah.
There's so much hair
yeah.
and fat and mud and everything. So to see some of the blood that we've got
yeah,
out of
that,
these is incredible.
That term comes from when they're hanging them and,
exactly.
and popping them in the neck, you know,
yep.
to properly seen, butcher them, not I've not actually in a hunting situation.
Seen a lot of fixed blades lose pigs. Because you need extreme trauma on a pig.
One of the things that I've noticed with this head, and honestly, as we're doing this podcast, there's still a lot of things to where we don't really know the why. We just have looked at a lot of results. And I feel like this thing has gone through more animals without a reaction than a lot of the expandables I've shot in the past. Do you feel that? Because we've been looking at like super high speed footage of the arrow on entrance and when it's coming out. And like that hog I shot last night was, how big was that thing? I mean,
200 plus.
Yeah.
I mean,
200 plus.
Pretty close. Yep.
Spot and stock. Shot her at 42 yards. And I could see the knock like in the dirt. But then, you know, we went on our track job when we came down. By then, you guys had flanked all the way around the canyon. And you're like, the only thing that was hanging out was like the, you know, right before the fletchings was all you could really see.
Oh, yeah. We pulled up on the side by side and you could see a red knock just glow. And I'm like, oh, his arrow's laying there. No, it was buried up to the fletchings in dirt, grass, wheat. You know, it wasn't like it was just laying on top. It was through that hog into there. I mean, you can kind of see it in the video. Almost that whole shaft's covered in mud.
And time will tell, but so far, this is funny enough. It's in my it's in my old broaded kit coffin.
We'll get you some new ones. Of
yeah,
those. Yeah, get you some branded right.
But so in this case right here is several of the heads. For the most part, almost every head, if I washed it, will close after. Like so, the blades are not bending to the point where they won't close. Now this particular head here, Nate, I'll just give you this. So that was Gen 1 that I got.
Okay.
Yep. That broadhead shot 3 different hogs without any change of the blades or the retention.
Wow.
I mean, and you can see it's the blades are pretty smashed.
Pretty straight. Yeah, but.
But straight. But then this one right here shot 2, but also one of the 2 it shot kind of caught a main socket, hit a lot of bones. So you can see that one, you know, in full disclosure, this one definitely has some chatter on the blade, and the animal never went more than 4. I think out of the first 12 you sent me, you only sent me 12, and I think, or maybe you sent me 9, and I remember like that first trip was like 12 or something that I shot because I was reusing heads.
Oh, yeah, it was way more animals than heads we sent you.
Yeah.
I remember that part.
Yeah.
But these weren't even hardened, right? I thought I got these late, and you were like, there was something about them that wasn't even full. Like, this is the first production. These were the first production heads this weekend that were like fully hardened and properly processed and actually in a package, right?
Yeah.
So, like, from the get-go, I'm like, oh, this is going to be so cool. So, I guess before we get too deep into, like, more stories about the gore, Nate, talk about everything about this broadhead and what makes it different, what makes it unique. Here's a – you want one of these big guys?
Yeah, that's a little easier to show.
Okay.
Yeah, it's you know, I think the biggest thing about the head is its rearward sliding. There isn't a better design for a head when it reaches the target.
Yeah.
You know, one of the negative things about rearward sliding is once you start getting them into 200-pound, you know, crossbows, because they want to open, and so that can be an issue with rearward sliding just in its the style of head rather than a fold over design or something like that, is they want to open. That's the brilliance that they are, and I think that's why we've been so successful with the 2-inch on hogs and different game like that. So to me, that's the biggest thing about this head and the effectiveness is the rearward sliding, because there is nothing more lethal once it impacts.
Right.
And then from there, durability is a big thing. If you can't keep that ferrule straight, it doesn't really matter about everything else, because, you know, if it's going to bend and, you know, keep that blade from fully opening, it really doesn't matter. So,
oh, yeah, I guess I've never even thought about that. So if you hit something hard with the improperly made mechanical, they won't even be able to deploy back because they have to follow the channel.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that initial impact, especially on a, you know, bone or something like that, that impulse going through, I mean, it'll just torque and twist that ferrule, and it'll just pinch the blades, and it just won't open. Or maybe it'll open eventually once it starts to slow down, when it starts traveling through the cavity, then it'll start to open.
If it has enough resistance against the front blades.
And, you know, the rearward sliding two blade is awesome. The bad thing is there's this huge slit down the center of the ferrule. You're kind of taking the what an engineer would say, well, like, don't do that. Yeah, you know, like, whatever, you just don't do that. Yeah. And you're like, no, we have to. You're like, oh crap. So to make this whole thing steel at 100 grains is taking a lot. I think I was telling you last night, like, we kind of work with like 10th of grains, you know, like you take it out here and you put it there and okay, try it again, and you just keep moving things around until you get, you know, the right balance between everything. But being all steel and being as durable as a ferrule, I think is the other thing that really makes this thing work quite well. And then the other one is just the retainer system. It's a stainless steel stamp piece.
I mean, that is this is what changes the game.
Yeah.
Everyone knows the heads I shot the most. I'm not going to sling mud or anything like that because it obviously it's been awesome for me.
Yep.
And I loved them. But I also really liked the results of the collared ones versus the new no-collar ones, because the no-collar ones, where they've had to put that half moon, I guess I'll call it, every blade I've broke has been in the same exact spots, and and when a blade breaks, it breaks there, and one of the thing was the collar was a pain in the butt, because if you put it in your quiver wrong and deployed it, you had to change out the collar. So listen, the no collar system was to fix a major problem in what was going on, and so to come up with something that allowed you to open and reclose, but do nothing to compromise the integrity of the blade, is like that, I think, is the secret, honestly.
Yeah, and that's what we stole from the Mega Meat Dead Meat. What we learned, that ball and socket system, and then with that, it had to be plastic for other reasons. But with this, we were fortunate enough that we were able to figure out how to do it with a stainless steel stamping, so you can get multiple uses out of it. And you know that I know that initially when guys first get new heads, I mean, they're just, you know, popping the blades open and close, open and close, open and close, to get confidence in what is this thing supposed to do. Having to swap out collars is that, you know, that kind of goes against that whole experience. But yeah, like you said, I mean, what we've been able to do because of it, I mean, you shoot multiple animals with the same thing. That just, again, just drives people's confidence in the reliability. And that took a lot to figure out. A lot of the initial ones you had, they were kind of, the dimples were hand pushed in and hand bent by me. They were pretty inconsistent.
Yeah, those two I know are what's left from Gen 1, and then, or at least the batches I got. And then this was actually when you felt really comfortable. I never shot this one. It's painted. I put the tip green because this is the one where you really felt like you got the retention where you needed it. But then, you know, you kind of knew the retention system was right, but then you had to end up changing the back of the ferrule some after
that one
too.
Yeah, you could over-rotate during that. Yeah, you could.
It was such a freaking, I mean, honestly, it was an honor doing a broadhead project with you guys. I mean, it really was, because you guys just, you know, I would say, hey, like when I showed you on that one generation, the blade swivel, mm-hmm. and you guys were like, oh, yeah, we didn't even look at that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, it'll.
Well, to be fair, I was like, he's probably doing something wrong. Was my that's Nate's. And then I was like, oh, crap, no, he's right.
Yeah, he did say that. He's like, I don't know. I don't think Nate would have sent it if it did that. I'm like, well, here you go.
Yeah.
Now, going back to Nate's point, like you said, you said it multiple times this weekend, simple and repeatable. We've had the same kind of samples since ATA, and they've been traveled from show to show to show to show. And everybody knows after you open a mechanical 2, 3, 5 times, you got to replace the clip.
Yep.
We're in thousands of times with one broadhead, two broadheads.
That's so
they've been handed
impressive.
To this customer, this dealer, and they're opening, closing them, clipping them, and they still feel, I would say 90 to almost 100% they did the first time we snapped them in. Like, it's incredible how simple and easy that broadhead is, and it's repeatable.
Which also addressed the other issue that you mentioned the other day is the no rattle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the big thing. And I was going to actually do that, so I was going to take
simple thing to fix.
I got one non-bloody arrow in my quiver, but, like, I'm hitting this right by my microphone, and you cannot hear it. And if any of you shoot other ones that I'm sure you do, you know that that those things rattling, and, you know, you if you're doing a spotting stalk and you have rattling blades on the front of your arrow, or if you draw an arrow back when you're as nervous as I was when I shot that last buck of the year, I mean, you would have heard it. I would have been rattling that much. These are so nice because it's, you know, it's literally a rattle-free retention system. You know, it's a lock system. You can really feel the positive lock when it goes in, which I really love that.
Yep.
But all you have to do when they're deployed, and, you know, you guys really focused on, if you're trying to deploy them by, like, pushing on them and you're not actually entering hide, it's not really – they were really designed, and maybe that's why they're penetrating. You know, they were designed for that – for the blade to open easy when it's going through on the right angle and it's pushing correctly. So if you get one, you know, just pull one of the bottom of the blades out, pull the other one back so you don't end up jamming this thing through your hand, and you can deploy it out. The blade angle was something that we worked on too. Now, this is critical for honestly any broadheads, and why I don't shoot certain mechanicals has to do with the blade angle. Even if the cut's there, if the blade angle's too steep, it just starts to.
It chops. It chops over slices.
Yeah, it chops over slices. I feel like this does get a slap cut, because it's definitely bigger holes going in than what this is, which I think, you know, it's driving the hide for that amount of space.
Yeah, pushing it in.
But with the tip that you have, you guys do such a good job of machining a really good point on the front. And, by the way, I really like what you did with the very front of this ferrule, because this thing has crushed some bones. And I, you know, some people like to, they want to cut into a bone with, like, a single bevel and, like, kind of go through it. I actually like to break it out of the way a lot of times. If you can crack it, then for me, the maybe one part of a blade might be hitting bone as it goes through, but it seems like the other one follows the easy path. Whereas when you're just slicing through an entire bone, that means the whole broadhead and then the arrow shaft is trying to go through a bone that just has a slice in it rather than being smacked out of the way. So I love that part. And if you guys are, if you ever see one, you want to open one, just pull them from the bottom, slide them back like that. And again, video version on YouTube if you guys want to see some of the stuff we're holding up. And to close them, all you got to do is, you know, slide that thing forward, push the bottom of the blade towards the arrow shaft. And yeah, when I asked you like what the response was at the ATA, because it wasn't like a major launch, right?
No, we were kind of quiet. We knew we weren't going to really be shipping until May. So we're not over the top with our launches. We have a really big clientele and we take care of our dealers and our customers really well, but we were kind of quiet about it. And it was instantly, as soon as people put them in their hands, it was like, oh, well, let me run over to this other booth and change my order real quick and we'll come back and talk more, you know? it was serious. And, but no, I mean, it was a waterfall. I mean, we were really, really busy. It was good ATA for the first time in a long time for, I think, the entire industry, but that was definitely the talk of the booth for sure, especially coming out of 2 years with the Mega Meet that has been dominating the mechanical game. I mean, we're pretty excited.
And it was pretty impressive when you're like, hey, we're a month through shows and we're still using the same samples, same clips for opening, closing. That's pretty cool.
Well, I didn't give them a lot of options.
So
many. You know, it's like.
No, but that being said, we've done, you know, plenty of mechanical launches and things that through the last 12, 15 years that Nate has a box. One of us are handed before the show because he's usually not there for the first day. He's like, this is what you have. Try not to overuse them, you know, because we're changing clips, we're changing that. It was like we had, you know, three or four in the booth. A couple of the guys, sales guys, had them in their hands. That was it. We never had to go in the back room and go, hey, can you swap that out for another one? Hey, can you swap that out for another one? It was the same. It was like, this is sweet. Like, I mean, it's going to be exciting. I mean, being that said, you know, you kind of said how to close them. Like, when you snap the first blade in there, it gets snug, but the second one almost kind of feels like it's
– yeah.
Like, and then once you feel them both snap in together, it's like, ooh, this is the system, right? It's a whole, you know, system how it pulls together.
Yeah, and they're between the blades too, which I was telling you last night. Once they get behind the screw, once it's deploying and it's sliding behind the screw, it's not like – for whatever reason, I'm not getting – with some of my older broadheads, I'd get some crazy sparks, which totally told me that it was blade on blade through deployment. Haven't seen any of that, which I personally think, it's less friction. So less friction equals more penetration, regardless of what the actual physical number is. Well, we're getting a little low on time. Before we wrap this up, the last thing I really want to make sure you talk about, Nate, is your blades, because you guys have an amazing blade process. They're ridiculously sharp and consistent. But it's also super simple, which I really, you know, for me, when people look at my bow equipment and they see stuff that I shoot, even when they see the backpack I wear or, you know, just I go off simplicity. You know, if it's simple, it's reliable. And you know, everything from my coaching process, my shooting technique, you know, everything just boils down to simplicity. So with the blades, I mean, you got all these are American blades?
They're not.
Okay.
They're not. Yeah, unfortunately, there really isn't that capability here in the States anymore to do strip grinding. To be even more honest, some of the best material, and that's probably the thing that we do with ours is the material that we spec out.
Yeah.
You know, a 420 or a 440 stainless steel isn't the same everywhere around in the world. Certain parts of the world make it better. You have to wait a lot longer. The material is a lot more expensive, but the microstructure really allows, and when you grind that blade edge is just free of a burr. And that's actually in Northern Europe of where they make the best material.
Yeah.
And so
I kind of I hit you blindside with that question.
Yeah, because I would love it to be from America if we had that option. But one of the aspects from G5 is we will go anywhere in the world if we think we can get the best.
I know. Yes, that's absolutely why I wanted – that's honestly, I wanted people to hear it from you because when I shot the blades and the fact that some of these blades are still sharp for multiple uses, and you can actually see two different – like there's two different blade angles on these blades – mm-hmm. And like the fact that you guys went around the world to find who could do it better than you can ever do it, and you're paying more for it, I just feel like that's a critical point, even though, you know, as much as Grace is right in the heart of, you know, auto country and yep. the machining capital of the world, the fact that you do that, to me, I really value that for a product that's this important. I mean, it's a product that when that thing, you know, everything that you've paid for the hunt, all the time you've waited, the vacation, everything comes down to this thing that's 2 inches long, in my opinion.
No, you're right.
And if you cut corners on that, which unfortunately, some of the ones I really liked cut the corner on the blade and where they're getting them from, and that's right. where some of my problems have come from, and that's why honestly I'm like, I would just love to do it the best we can. So tell us about the different tapers on those blades.
We have a rough grind. That's the main is boy, you're gonna put me on the spot, I'm not really sure. It's on a print somewhere I drew. You know, off the top of my head, I think it's like 40 degrees and maybe it's 20 degrees on the finish hone. But, you know, there's a lot of other little nuanced stuff because it's a strip. You know, these things are in big coils. They're like 5-foot diameter coils mm-hmm. that these things are in. And you can spec out different things to make sure that blade is a little bit straighter. That it could really nerd out and go into the weeds. I won't, but it's just
don't give away the secrets, bro. I'm just telling you got good blades.
Yeah,
that
a lot of it is
gushing.
Just. Yeah, deciding that you know, we'll give up a few pennies here and there of profit to make sure that it's just, you know, it's the best that you can get, and longevity will win out. So
that's amazing. T2 yeah. right now available in 100. I will say this for those of you listening: when people ask me about broadhead weights, I've always liked the flight characteristics of most 100 grain broadheads. And now when people are making such good high tolerance collars, if you're a collared person, use more weight in your insert or use more weight in your collar if you can choose a broadhead that will fly better. Because remember, above any of this, accuracy kills the most. Yep. And, you know, we haven't even gone into the accuracy point of view, but honestly, when you see this head, you're going to know that it freaking flies good. So for right now, we got hundreds. Is there going to be – have you started on 125s or anything? Or
They'll be shipping shortly after, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So you're dialed on that. Yep. Sweet. Are you going to stop at 125?
For this year.
Yeah, we're not – I mean, hundreds of 125s okay. have been our wheelhouse. We don't tend to climb up that ladder too far.
Yeah, so. And like I said, some of the collars, you know, like even Easton right now is making such great collar systems for their stock yep. arrows. All right, go around the table. Brian, you got anything you want to add before we roll out Knock On Nation? Anything you want to say?
No, I'm just happy to be here and just glad we were able to get this partnership started, man.
Thank you, man. Helm, what you got?
The only thing I want to say is I love that this isn't just a Me Too broadhead. This is – we changed the game of two blades.
Absolutely.
You guys changed the game of two blades and the locking system. So you guys made big improvements, and it's very noticeable being here on the ranch, putting them through animals. Job well done.
That's awesome. Appreciate Nate, it. What you got?
Yeah, it's a new partnership, and we're excited about it. And I think just the work that we've done this past year hopefully will kind of be a preview of more to come.
We'll refine it. There's no doubt. There's no doubt we're gonna do some cooler stuff down the road.
Yep.
So two blade fixed.
You got it.
I'm just kidding. I just threw that out there. People at the end are just like, wait, what?
Yeah. Wait a minute.
Hey, I'm down with whatever. I try it all, people. I promise you. I try it all. And I go with what lets me notch a tag and lets me see him go down on. If I can see him go down with my own eyes, that's the place I want to be.
Amen. Absolutely.
And, you know, not needing a blood trail is the best way for me. But if you want a blood trail, come to the T2.
I don't know. Blood trail is kind of fun. So.
All right, everybody, knock on. We'll see you later on.
All right.
Be sure to check out knockonarchery.com for our full line of custom design products, as well as free in-depth education and bow hunting entertainment to help you shoot at your best.